Okay.
It's time to get it on, y'all. Episode 196 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. Well, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, sometimes the paranormal, and who knows whatever else. Remember, Wednesday is going to be the Wild Wednesday, and it could be something permaculture related, or it may not be. It more than likely, it's going to be something I think that is edifying. It might, in fact, help you. I'm going to kind of lean more and more and more towards the health side of things. And in the coming weeks, I'm going to explain the reasons why. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, handle all your preparedness needs yourself. Whatever you can't source, go check out Heaven's Harvest. And remember, they got some seeds that are ballin'. And if you would like to tip a pimp, you can do it over there on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. Make sure you start with a Pimpcast, of course. And you can drop a derivation of Bitcoin over there called sats. So if you want to drop a SAT on a PIMP, you know where to do it. And please, pass this Pimpcast around, y'all. I know we're like 180 degrees different from most of our other farm podcasts out there. So it does have a certain appeal, but the powers that shouldn't be don't want this information out there. So kind of need your help. Feel free to go over there, give us 5-star reviews if you haven't already, and help us out. And like I said, if you'd like, you could also tip a pimp. All right, so let's just jump right into the farm news. Man, first of all, before I even get into that, y'all, it's blowing my mind that we're easing up on episode 200. I'm guessing it's going to probably be more of an unceremonious type thing. Who knows? It might be something else. I'm not quite sure what I want to do for that. Probably do some kind of giveaway. Not really sure. So if you have any ideas, remember, hit me up at billy@permapasturesfarm.com. Let me know what you think I ought to do for episode 200. So we're going to jump right into the farm news, okay? So some of this stuff is going to sound like a broken record, but it is the reality of doing this work, especially at this scale, y'all, especially when we move everything every day. So some of this stuff is going to sound like a broken record, but it's important that you hear it, especially for all the new people that are either in this space or considering of getting into this space. Look, it's what it is. As one ghetto philosopher named Snoop Dogg once said, it do what it do. So anyway, part of that is weed eating. Now, when things are very, very, very vegetative right now and you don't have enough stock to keep up, weed eating is the way that I do that. Now, typically when we have animals on a pasture, we don't leave them there more than 3 days because we're worried about parasite load. And one of the best ways you can avoid that is, number one, not leaving them in a spot for more than 3 days. It's less of an issue for poultry, but it definitely, if you have ruminants, you don't want to have them there more than 3 days, because then, especially with sheep, because then they start grazing even lower, then they're hitting all those parasites, which is what I think we're dealing with right now. We've had a ton of rain. I mean, ton and ton and ton of rain. And we got stock that wasn't absolutely fantastic as we were led to believe. And in fact, I'm quite sure they had quite a few crutches. So what I'm planning on doing is that all the babies, they're doing absolutely fine. They're well adapted to where they are. But the other ones that didn't come from here, well, we're seeing a few problems, and I'm guessing it might be worms. But the cool thing is that our dewormer, y'all, I'm telling you, Michelle is an absolute dynamo on that stuff. She has this natural dewormer. If anybody wants to know what it is, email me and I'll try to let you know, because she puts quite a few things in there, all of which have worked, unbelievably in the past when we've had these problems, and you don't have to resort to things like ivermectin and, you know, other things that are going to kill your soil life. So there are, I mean, like wormwood, a lot of other things. And like I said, she's a straight up alchemist when it comes to that stuff. But back to the weed eating. When you don't have enough stock to eat, to create the impact that you want, which right now is about a third. We want them to eat a third, stomp a third, and leave a third. And I just recorded a short. I think it's going to come out. I'm not sure when it's going to come out. But anyway, I recorded a short trying to lay this out for you. And every other farmer around here is probably cringing when they drive by. I don't know why, because my grass looks better than anybody for miles. And the reason is we don't overgraze. We don't leave them there too long. And another good key is that we don't bring them back around before the grass has, or the ground rather, or the grass, all of it, the microbes, you name it, have had time to recover. So that's how you can avoid the worms in the first place. And then you're going to have these where you have inferior stock. That's number one. And, you know, number two, when you have this kind of rain, I mean, good night, man. It's been nonstop. In fact, this might be the first continued sunlight that we've had in weeks. I mean it, y'all, every single day. And I know a lot of other people are dealing with this too. But what I'm doing is I'm going in and I'm knocking off the seed heads after they leave that paddock for two reasons. Number one, the grass in some of this area is up 5 feet. I mean, it's 5 feet tall. If we had cows out here, y'all, they would absolutely love it. Sheep deal with it and they're able to deal with it and they make tracks through there. They lay it down, they stomp it, they eat it, they do all they're supposed to do. But for two reasons, we got to clip off those heads. Number one, it's only going to make the pasture more lush, but you can't chop it too low. Just take off the heads. I'm serious. That's all you want to do. And then your chickens, if the grass is too high, they're going to have a reluctance to actually going in there and working as much as they'd like. So that's two reasons why you do it. So give them that time they need. You know, the parasite load is going to be much reduced. I mean, you're going to have a much lower incident of parasite issues if you make sure you don't bring them back around too often, number one. And number two, just as important, if you don't leave them there that long. So if you do those two, you're giving yourself a big leg up. But if you have inferior livestock or things that need to get culled, well, that's where you find out where they need to go, because of all of them out there right now, all the babies are good. And there's two females that are doing decent. So outside of that, you know, the rest of them probably need to be culled. And what's love got to do with it, y'all? This is business. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm building a flock that is parasite resistant. Look, if you don't have that, you gots to go. And that's the way you look. You got to be downright ruthless when it comes to culling, unless you want a petting zoo, unless you're going to destroy your ground with a bunch of ivermectin and things you don't need. So folks, this is the reality of trying to do this as cleanly and holistically as you possibly can. And part of it means you're going to have to cull sometimes mercilessly. And that's just what it has to be. All right. So other things we got going on around here, digging comfrey, y'all. And I'm telling you what, we'll probably have to do another video on that, because Michelle has devised a way of doing this where it has very little impact. I mean, minimal impact. And that's what you want to do. If you got to do any kind of digging, you don't want to go crazy with it. And she invented this way of getting it out, getting more of it, and doing it with as little impact as possible. Because the problem we have around here is that we don't have dedicated, outside of just a handful of beds, I mean, by and large, most of our comfrey comes out of the food forest and the orchard. So we try to do as minimal impact as possible. So we're doing that, y'all, and I am still absolutely positively floored at how many worms I'm seeing coming up out of there. We had no worm, folks, just to give you a basis of comparison, when we first got here about 5 years ago, there were no worms at all. In the garage, when we pulled in here, man, it just made us sick. When we saw jug after jug after jug after jug of all this deworming compound. And in certain areas of the property, we're still dealing with it. Erosion issues and stuff like that. But look, it's coming around. In fact, I've showed you the video. Haven't gone into any great detail on the pastures, although I probably ought to do a standalone video on that to show you side by side the recovery you can get just by doing the right things, y'all. And it's not that difficult. It's just, well, I mean, I guess it depends on what you call difficult. Because if you got to remove, I mean, folks, there was a video and I can't find it for the life of me now. And I told Greg Judy about it. There was a video out there of all these farmers that were encouraged to go out there and do his methods. To a person, every last one of them said, wow, it works. but it's too much work. And what they called too much work was actually moving the animals once or twice a day. That's what they called too much work. So if that's too much work for you, I guess this ain't for you. But doing anything otherwise, y'all, this is why farmers are getting a bad rap. When we can go out there and show people, hey, this is what it started like. This, just doing very basic things. This is how we improve it. This is how we get the soil life down in there. Here's how our water retaining capabilities. And here's how the commercial farmers aren't doing it. If we can get that out there and get more test cases for folks to see, because the goal is, I'll be honest with y'all, is to do farm tours here, but we just don't have any place to park people. And we can do something like that maybe once every couple of months. We can't be doing it every month or every week. We just can't do it. We don't have the bandwidth. So many people are begging to come out and do it, and we just can't do it until we acquire, hopefully, and y'all pray for us that we get this property next to us, that the Lord would grant us this. Because if we did, and we could turn it into something of a parking lot. Now, if I had that, then we could bring people out here and do some real deal tours and show you what we're doing. Not to say that we have it all put together, but we got a few of them, you know, we got some things worked out in the way that others might very well want to replicate. Because, folks, I'm telling you, the more I move towards nature, it's just two of us doing this. The more I move towards nature and do it the way I think God intended, the way it becomes easier and easier and easier. And then the soil life is growing and growing and growing. So good night, y'all. That's exactly why we do it. All right. So let's see here. So we got some other things going on around here. I'm finally weed eating the top of the mountain where the sheep left a little while ago. Now, I'll be honest with y'all. It's not a project I wanted to do or want to do because there's a whole lot of wood in there where we brought down trees. And we didn't get the wood out of there, so I'm having to weed eat around it, and then I got to get the wood off the mountain. So that takes some doing, and it ain't no fun. But, folks, I'm going to tell you a little hack that I'm doing with myself. When you got those jobs you just don't want to do, any day of the week. Now, let me just preface this by saying that I would do for free any day of the week what I do on the farm before I'd ever want to go back to doing what I did, getting paid really good money. I'm dead serious when I say that. But everybody's going to have those projects you just don't want to do. It's been lingering and you hate it and you don't want to do it. Let me break it down to you this way. Here's what I do. Here's the way I trick my brain into motivating myself to do those jobs. So like I said, it's a bunch of wood just scattered up here. And the best way for me to go about it is to throw it down the hill. So instead of just going out there till the job is done, look, once again, y'all, I'm taking my own advice. This is a war you don't win in miles. You win it in inches. So for 20 minutes at a time, or 30 minutes, if that's what I feel like doing, I will go out there and say, okay, when this alarm goes off, I'm going to stop for the day. Folks, you will be absolutely shocked, stunned, and astonished what you will get done in the course of a week if you just time yourself for 20 minutes. That's all you got to do. And then it also, there's a psychological aspect that I kind of learned. Actually, I learned it from a number of people, and it was brought to bear by Eric Sider turned me on a while ago to Diary of a CEO. There was a guy on there a while back that talked about this sort of thing. And then I hear these other biohackers that I listen to. I don't know which one it was. And they were talking about how people get all, you know, oh, shoot, I got to work out. I got to do this. I got to do that. Well, you can overlay it as a workout. Now it's 20 minutes. Now I do it rigorously. When that bell goes off, bam, I'm done, at least for that day. So that's how I go about doing it. That's one of the hacks I do. So with that wood that's coming off the mountain, so I'm looking at it, okay, everything in permaculture, there is not one thing in permaculture that has a single purpose. Okay, some of it's a little waterlogged. Okay, I know what I'm going to do with some of that stuff. Some of it ain't going to do well in the fireplace. I know what I'm going to do with that. So I'm looking at my options here. Okay, I could use, if I wanted, I could use some of it for a hugel culture mound. Basically, you're just covering up wood that you can't use for any other reason. I could do it that way. Some of it's pretty rotten. Some of it I could put in the fireplace. Some of it I can use to make bone sauce because I got three different grades of wood. The best stuff goes in the fireplace. The second best stuff goes in the bone sauce, into making the bone sauce, because I got to have wood. And, you know, some of that black locust really works best because I got to have the heat just right. Otherwise, I'm going to mess it up, or I can mess it up if it's too hot. I can mess it up if it's not hot enough. And then the third, you know, the stuff that I can't use for anything else, that's going to be a real good candidate for hugel culture, which is tricky in this environment because it's so doggone steep. But I could also use it, if I let it dry out a bit, I could also use it as something, once it's dried out sufficiently enough, the waterlogged stuff, I can actually use it in the hugel culture to start that pile. So think about that. Like I said, I got three grades of wood of how I go about doing it around here. Okay, so let's see what else I'm looking at doing. I'm kind of prepping my brain right now. I'm trying to get the weed eating done. And the main purpose for that is when you put out compost extract, it doesn't always turn out like it does in the pasture, like right off. Well, there's a whole lot of dogs, so to speak, or sheep or chickens we're bringing to the hunt out there that help to improve the soil. But on the same token, there are areas that don't get that TLC quite as much. So Dr. Ingham, Elaine Ingham, for those that don't know, she used it like this, okay? So when the pilgrims came to America, they were dying off like flies, okay? Until another wave showed up, and then they reinforced the first ones, and then another wave. That's exactly how you got to look at your compost extract. You're not going to necessarily see it on the first application. In fact, in most cases, you're not. It's going to be the second and the third applications, but these are difficult places to get to. And their inclination, because of high bacterial content, their inclination is to want to produce more of that silvergrass. So it's kind of a combination of beating back the silvergrass until my pioneers, basically my pilgrims, take root in there. So it takes subsequent applications, and it's usually done about 2 weeks apart. So that's exactly how I'm going about doing that. So, folks, I'm going to get a little conspiratorial. Huh. That's new for me, huh? Yeah. Wink, wink. Look, y'all, look up in the sky. And in most cases, tell me if these clouds are legit to you, because they have been spraying that aluminum powder and barium salts like nobody's business. I mean, absolutely nuts. We actually can tell the difference in how we feel from day to day if you're observant to it. If you feel a little bit weird and wacky and out of sorts, just kind of look and see whether or not you have a chemtrail-y kind of day, because a lot of these clouds that they have out there aren't indigenous. Yeah, there are other things. So I'm seriously, I mean, looking at what they did in Tennessee, I'm not sure how well it's working yet, but looking at what they did in Tennessee, man, I'm really thinking about, and I got to pray more about it, and I'm going to ask you guys to pray as well to see whether or not I should be one of the ones to help lead the charge. I mean, everybody's waiting for somebody else to kick it off, but why not me? And why not seek, if need be, political office to see that I can steamroll such a thing? And that's how these things happen, y'all. It may not be Tennessee may be the first, but who says they got to be the last? Maybe that's something I got to look into, because I'm telling y'all, I'm downright sick of it. It's beyond for us, because Michelle will get downright indignant the moment she sees it. We had sunlight breaking out the other day, and then all of a sudden, yeah, shows up. Look, go check out geoengineeringwatch.org. Watch that documentary they have out there. It's called, I can't remember, but it's geoengineeringwatch.org. And then just, folks, get yourself drummed up on it. And get your, maybe tell other folks about it. I mean, folks seem to be a little bit more wary about what they're being told and who's telling it to them. So maybe people are open to this sort of thing right now, because more and more when I have these conversations, people seem to be more heads up about it than they used to be in the past. Because I'm telling y'all, this ain't, it's making me sick, literally. I mean, mentally and otherwise, y'all. So look, go out there, do what you can. All right, so some other things that are going on. It's not farm news, but I think we need to be aware of it. And it's what happened with the death of Iran's leader. Now, some people are already saying, folks, this is a big deal, because if it turns out that the U.S. was behind it, which is a possibility, every time anything nefarious happens in this world right now, I'm pointing the finger at us. Because, I mean, how much proof do we need? If we didn't do it directly, then one of our proxies might have in a lot of cases. It could very well be something as simple as, thick fog came on and then bam, could have been chemtrails. Who knows? But you're already looking at the people out there saying, man, we're suspecting Israel. We're suspecting United States. And would it be beyond us to do something like this? I mean, the history of false flags that we were responsible for that are legion at this point are out there. So what I'm telling y'all, remember the motto of this show, stay alert, stay alive. That's why I'm doing so much. Even though I didn't call it a preparedness video in our last one, when we're talking about this orchard, that's exactly what it was. I'm inoculating the brains of other people out there to let them know, hey, you can do this, but I'm not putting some crazy title on there, do this or you're going to die kind of thing, because I don't roll that way. But it is telling people out there, hey, you know what? I can probably do this. You know, this is possible for me. So that's exactly the intent there. So get yourself squared away, y'all. That freeze dryer, Harvest Right freeze dryer, there's a reason we sell them. This thing works like nobody's business. No problems, no nothing, except for a valve that got clogged up. I replaced, and that was like a $10 fix. But it ended up costing me about $100 because I was impatient. But that's another story altogether. Folks, be getting your beans and bullets squared away. I ain't kidding. The dollar is dropping like nobody's business. Gold and silver is going through the roof. And it seemed to happen before this whole thing in Iran even happened. So makes you wonder, okay, did some people know about this beforehand? I don't know. Bottom line is, you need to be getting your house in order. And you should have been. But man, I'm telling you, that freeze dryer is running day and night. I'm losing sleep over all this. And when I say losing sleep, it's not because I'm worried. It's because I'm actually doing my preparedness. I was out there with I ended up buying a few gallons of milk from one of my friends down the road. And so what am I doing with it? Well, the milk itself, when I'm done with it, I'm taking the cream off. I'm making butter, and I'm also making whipped cream out of it. As soon as we get some more strawberries, that's what I'm talking about. And I made Michelle some eggs today with some of our eggs and some of our butter. And she was absolutely floored at how well it tasted, because this homemade butter, y'all, is pretty doggone hard to beat. Even if you buy some heavy cream from the store and make it yourself, it's light years better. So the byproduct of all that is buttermilk, which I'm going to use to spray on these trees, which is going to help also with any bug infestations that want to mess with your trees, y'all. This is how you go about it. This is how we go about it. You're not killing anything. What you're really doing, and I should have already done it by now, and I did it with part of the orchard. I haven't hit the food forest yet, which I want to make a video about and show you how I'm doing it, is so you can drink that milk, whatever you don't drink. You can make, you know, cheese, butter, you know, buttermilk and all this other stuff. I take that byproduct, I put it in my pump sprayer, mix equal amounts with water, and I spray it all over my trees. Because the bacteria that's coming out of there is very, very helpful, especially if it's non-homogenized or pasteurized. Can't use that stuff. I mean, you can, but it doesn't work as well. This homemade, homegrown milk, y'all, if you did nothing but buy some of that and get yourself squared away on your trees, it's going to help you a long way, because it's occupying all the position. Those beneficial bacteria is occupying all the positions that your bad stuff would want to take. Well, it can't take root if you do it that way. Now, it can also be done with compost tea. I don't have time to make that right now because believe me, y'all, it is very exacting to get compost tea right in the proportions that you need, because you want it to be sticky. You want it to stay on there. But until I can get around to doing that, that's where the milk comes in. So that's another thing we're doing right now. And once again, it's helping in our preparedness. If I can keep these trees alive and have them robust, the mulching, the composting, the spraying the milk, all that on there, y'all. And honestly, when I say mulch, I mean, get all the wood chips you can, put them around your trees, and you will be shocked at what happens. Even if you didn't do anything else. Now, you got to be patient. And if you put down cardboard and wood chips around your trees, you will be shocked, because what you're doing is really taking a throwback to Fukuoka. Fukuoka 101. Mulch, mulch, mulch. Look after the soil, and you'll be shocked at how many trees come around. All right, y'all. So June 9th coming up, East Tennessee Homestead Gathering. The Texas Boys, a.k.a. the Fearless Podcast, are going to be putting that on. And I think also in with my son as the permaculture consultant. So you want to go over there and check out their website at thetexasboys.com. And go over there and get yourself squared away. Look, if you're in the Arklatex anywhere, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, you're anywhere around there, y'all, you want to go out there and find out what's going on. They apparently have one really killer location. So go check them out. You'll be glad you did. And remember, hey, Redemption Shield, y'all. I talked to Gina last week. We'll have her on this Wednesday if you missed it on the podcast. Redemption Shield, y'all, I'm a big believer in it. We use those mats multiple times throughout the day, even in the evening when I'm sitting down doing what I got to do. My bare feet are sitting on a Redemption Shield mat when I'm inside the house, and I'm grounding as often as I can. And don't forget about that deep breathing. Remember, check out that guy Breathing with Sandy on YouTube. He can come off a little bit, you know, loopy or whatever, but man, he's really got some good breathing programs. Do this experiment. Try deep breathing while being grounded, whether you're outside or whether you're on a breathing mat, and tell me if you don't feel 180% better. I mean, y'all, if you're in a bad mood, whatever the case may be, chemtrails are out there. But by breathing, you're doing so much for your body. Check out all the biohackers out there. I'm doing it at least twice a day, sometimes even three, depending on how much energy I have. In fact, right before I did this podcast, in fact, when I do all of the podcasts as of late, I'm out there doing the deep breathing on a grounding mat right here in the studio, right before I broadcast, because like I said, I'm usually coming off the heels of whatever I was doing outside. So redemptionshield.com, promo code PERMA will get you 10% off. And in fact, I think I got a special right now where you can get even more. All right, so the good news, let's get on into that. I went way longer in the farm section. And folks, I'm going to continue to do that because I know so many people are kind of thankful about that part where I'm spending more time talking about the things that I know can help you boots on the ground. So I'm going to, look, if I feel compelled to do it, I'm just going to keep on doing it. All right, so first good news story, Peru passes law classifying people who identify as transgender, non-binary, and intersex as, quote, mentally ill. Well, it's been done for all of humankind, notwithstanding the last 15, 20 years. I mean, that was considered mental illness up until recently. So good news on that, y'all. I mean, we're not waking up yet in America. We're going to need that crucible of really hard times to get us to cross over and get that. Because you know what? Adversity makes monsters. What do they say? I think it was Victor Hugo. Adversity makes men. Prosperity makes monsters. And think about how long we've been prosperous. So once that crucible of really hard times hits, and it will, and it is, and you can see it every single time you go in a grocery store, but as it unfolds, y'all, more and more and more people are going to wake up. So that's what I'm hoping. It's happened in some of these other places already. We're just way behind in terms of it. All right, so the next good news story. America has run out of Patriot missiles to send to Ukraine. So what's next? All right, so why is that good news? Because, well, if you can't wage war, then people don't die. And these are all proxy wars, y'all. I'm not even going to lie. We and everybody else over there, I could get deep into the weeds as to why I think or why I really know this is happening. If you look at the seedy things that were going on in Ukraine long before Russia went in there, and we were behind most of it. Israel was part of it. UK was part of it. A lot of the seedy, nasty child trafficking and all the other things that were going on, it was happening in Ukraine. Organ harvesting. I mean, I can't even believe I got to say that. Organ harvesting, folks, all that was happening over there. So we are basically, and we threw, what, another $2 billion down on Ukraine? I think it was passed today, and it was one of those little sneaky things. Yeah, you can't wage war. Well, at least over there, well, I'm sure they're going to try to find another war elsewhere because everybody's kind of getting, you know, the Ukraine flags aren't as prominent as they once were in social media. So sure, they're looking to start another war elsewhere. It might very well be Israel. I'm sure they're ramping up to do it somewhere else. Look, y'all, we are hype. We are well in the false flag season. Nothing's kicked off as well or so far. And I'm hoping, yeah, you run out of bombs and bullets and all the other things you need to murder these people over there. And maybe this world will straighten out a little bit. So on the heels of that, that thing here is appeals court rejects. Okay, this may not sound like good news, but I'm telling you why it is. Appeals court rejects request by Maryland parents to allow kids to opt out of reading LGBTQ books. These are elementary all the way up, y'all. I don't even know where to start with this. But I'm calling this good because the only option that parents are finding, and it happened during COVID, record numbers got out of the compulsory education system. Look, if you want to know just how bad it is, go check out the work by John Taylor Gatto, all of his work, and you're going to look within the first couple of chapters. And keep in mind, John Taylor Gatto was voted like Teacher of the Year in New York State for like several years in a row. And then he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times or New York Post And he said, I'm retiring from teaching because I can no longer knowingly abuse children. And when you read what he wrote there, it will absolutely stun. When he was winning Teacher of the Year awards, y'all, he had to sneak around. It is jaw-dropping when you stop to think about it. He had to basically sneak out there and teach them real stuff on the down low that the, you know, powers that shouldn't be in the school system didn't want done. And they kept going in there. You know, they put people in his class to find out how he's doing it and how all these kids, his students in inner city, were just turning out to be incredible citizens, couldn't figure it out. And he would have to dumb it down every time they put observers in there. So going back to this thing is when it gets bad enough, that's when people wake up. But right after COVID, people realized, we could start our own homeschool co-op where, let's say, Sally down the road teaches history. Mike over here teaches science. So-and-so over there. And then they're finding out in these parent co-ops that they could really do and teach these kids on a level that was undreamed of in the mainstream education system. And their kids are not going to be taught any nonsense. Well, that's exactly why I'm calling this good news, because it's going to make parents say, you know what? Had enough of this. I'd rather them get an education either at the house or in these co-ops that are forming. And that's why I'm calling it good news, y'all. It has to get worse. Sadly, it's going to have to get much worse before people wake up. Remember, you got to wake up and smell the corruption or fall asleep drinking the hemlock. That's it. We'll go into my man, Eric.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, where food goes to die. Do we need refrigerators? Most people would say they are a necessity. I think they've become a necessary evil. They keep getting bigger and we keep filling them up with food from the grocery store. They are so big and overfilled we forget what's in there, and then that organic produce starts the slow march towards the trash. I hate wasting food. But it is mitigated by having chickens. At least it is going towards eggs or compost production. The oversized refrigerators that are the norm are a big part of the problem. We should have smaller refrigerators and larger freezers. When you are obsessed with eliminating industrial agriculture, you realize how many support structures exist in our day-to-day lives. The grocery store and the refrigerator are two of the biggest ones. When you eat from your garden, you rely on both much less. A big empty refrigerator almost requires you to go to the store and fill it up. A large freezer and a root cellar can satisfy most of your food storage needs, which would enable you to have a very small refrigerator, which would mostly just be for dairy and leftovers. And leftovers were traditionally eaten for breakfast the next day anyway. It's amazing how bloated with useless functions modern appliances have become. We slap a screen and an interconnection on it and call it a smart fridge. A smart fridge is the ones in the 50s and 60s that had rotating shelves. The more you get involved in growing your own food, you realize how much more useful products from that era have become. A real smart fridge would be one that tells you what food you need to eat first and gives you a recipe for it, but that would probably make too much sense. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
Bam! That's my dog right there, y'all. Once again, hitting it out of the park. And for good news for all you folks out there wondering where Eric's been on the program, he's going to be on next week. So I'm looking forward to that. So, in response to what he just said there, man, I couldn't agree more. I mean, and I'll tell you what else gets me. Remember when you were kids? You know, I'm 53 years old, y'all. And I remember as kids, refrigerators, all appliances in the house, you notice how long they lasted? Forever and a day. I mean, forever and a day, they lasted. Now, they engineer what's called planned obsolescence into everything. So we ended up buying a new washer and dryer. I mean, this is a couple of years ago. All of these smart dryers, I mean, if they're smart, then tell me why am I using three times the power to get the same job done? And the clothes ain't even dry. I mean, you're better off sticking them on a clothesline anyway. Like Eric said a while ago, why are we cooking our clothes? So, I mean, I understand, you know, towels and everything like that. You know, you probably want them in the dryer. When you hang them out, it's a little scratchy on the body. But, you know, by and large, all of these so-called smart appliances, y'all, they crap out in no time at all. And in fact, when I go to get a new freezer these days, when I can find it, I go to a place that doesn't rebuild because they put in brand new compressors that weren't made with planned obsolescence. At least that's what they used to be. I'm not sure it's being done that way now. But yeah, go out there, y'all. You know, find the old stuff. And in fact, if there's somebody out there producing some of those retro ones, man, that would really be helpful. But yeah, another hat tip to Eric, man, on another sound tip of the day. Go check him out, y'all. You need permaculture. And for all you folks hitting me up about design stuff, look, y'all, I'm not in the business. That's Eric and William that do all that. So yeah, I'm just not into the, I really don't have the bandwidth. I really can't add another thing to my day. So yeah, go check them out, y'all. Plus they're light years better at it than I am. So, yeah, go to the pros out there. All right. So, we're going to get into the main topic. And before we do, remember EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Remember, I'm a journeyman electrician, 27 years experience out there. And EMP Shield did not hit me up, just like Redemption Shield. I got with them to see if they would be a sponsor of this show, because that's how much I believe in their product, and it's everywhere around here. In fact, I'm about to install two more of them out there on the vehicles. So empshield.com, promo code PERMA will get you $50 off. And remember, check out that thing on the house too, y'all. That's your biggest threat right there. Whether it's lightning strike or whatever, they cover you all the way around, and they cover you for 25 G's. Find me another company out there that'll do that. So empshield.com, promo code PERMA, get you $50 off. So I want to talk to you about what I did this weekend. And like I said, I'm a guy with limited time, seriously limited time. And I make myself rest from Friday at 6 p.m. until Saturday at 6 p.m. If I do anything in there, believe me, it's active rest. It's things that are not work. It's things where I, you know, all I got to do at this point, I think I might take that tip from Joel Salatin, where I basically turn the phone off. Don't answer no calls. Don't do any of that stuff. But, you know, we got, in fact, maybe just kick on over to a landline. We had one, but then we were getting like robocalls like nobody's business. So we got rid of it. Might want to think about bringing that thing back. So anyway, this group this weekend, or this, the groups we met with this weekend, first on Saturday. And what I'm trying to get at, y'all, is micro training. I know this sounds a little bit new. You probably never heard of it before. And in fact, I'm not sure if I invented the term or not, but that's what I'm calling it. So when I was in the chiropractor's office with Michelle getting our backs, both of us getting our backs worked on Friday, y'all, I am not kidding you. A guy walked in there. I knew he looked familiar to me, but I couldn't place him. And then I'm talking, I dropped off there's a lady that works there, Miss Geneva is her name, and she's got allergy issues and a few other issues, and from time to time we drop off things to her. So I was dropping off some honey, and this guy behind me says, "Hey, you keep bees?" I said, "Yeah." And then right then and there, I looked at his hat, and I'm like, "Oh, okay, he's from Dry Ridge Bee Supply over in Weaverville." And I'm like, what are the odds of this dude walking into this chiropractor's office at exactly the same time I'm leaving, only to tell me that they got a training class on Saturday at, I think he said 10 o'clock. And then they were going to have lunch afterwards. So I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll be there. We ain't got a whole lot going on. So I'm going to chill out there, go see what's up. Probably won't partake in the lunch. And so we went. So we got the chores done, went out there, and I wanted to go really for a couple of reasons. Number one, Michelle almost never leaves, y'all. And for her to leave at all usually has to be a good reason, despite my protest. So I was like, okay, they got this bee training class. It lasts for an hour. Let's go check it out. I mean, how bad can it be? So I get over there, and then we showed up just a tad bit late, which I hate doing. So we got in there, and he's out there teaching a class already. Same guy I saw at the chiropractor's office. So he's out there, and then in an hour, y'all, I can't believe how much I learned. I mean, admittedly, I am no bee expert. I know just enough to make me dangerous. And so he's going out here and demonstrating on his hives out there how he does a split. And he's showing a method I'd never seen before. I'm sure other beekeepers out there know what it is, but I'd never seen it before. And now I've seen some more intrusive ways to do it, but watching the way he did it was absolutely astonishing to me. And then explained how he did it. Now, I'm not going to go through all the nuts and bolts of it, but inside of an hour, not only did I learn that, but I'm also getting the benefit from everybody's. I didn't ask any questions. because frankly, I'm too ignorant to ask any intelligent questions, but other people were. And so I'm the beneficiary of their good questions. And inside of an hour, y'all, I can't even believe how much I learned. We even picked up some supplies while we were there, things we needed anyway, and we're planning on going to his place to get anyhow. And then get this really cool chart showing, you know, talking about all the honey flows and the danger zones and all these other things. Inside of an hour, y'all, learned so much. Absolutely so much. Now, you can also figure out what not to do in some of these things. Because one thing I know we don't do is give our bees any crutches. We don't feed them any sugar water. We don't do any of that stuff. If they don't stick around, if they don't make it, look, that's on them. We give you, unlike a lot of other options, look, we have a permaculture farm. This is the same case Stefan Subkowiak made in the permaculture orchard video, is that you will find that your bees do so much better when instead of just 2, maybe 3 months out of the year, you're supplying them stuff. Well, when you have a permaculture orchard and a farm, you have things that are kicking. I mean, when you have annuals and perennials and all the other things that the bees want, you're not spraying any drugs. Well, you're finding out that they are way more, because what they're talking about in terms of what you can expect in a year, I didn't say anything and Michelle didn't either. We're like, man, we're getting way more than that. And I think it has to do with the fact that we do things the way we do. We're not putting any drugs out here. The only drugs that are landing on this property are the chemtrails that, you know, are falling to the ground, and we're praying over it and hoping that the Lord makes it all inert. But you can also go to these courses and figure out what not to do, because they do. A lot of these folks were out there feeding sugar water. We've never fed sugar water and we won't. And we give them their own honey and everything they need through the winter. That's how we do it. I mean, those bees out in nature, man, nobody's giving them sugar water. So it's either, you know, you got to fend for yourself. Otherwise, you're not going to make it. And yes, from time to time, we do have weak hives that don't make it. But going to that 1 hour training was so unbelievable. And if you're into eating, you know, Domino's pizza or whatever, they had that for you too. I'm just, you know, I'm really trying to be careful as much as I possibly can about the things I'm putting in my mouth these days. And knowing full well that anxiety, all that stuff that comes from that food is not something I ought to eat. So it gave me an option to take the homestead honey somewhere else to a place where we could eat the food, which is exactly what we did. And went to Taco Billy's, went over there, ate. Man, I mean, as a little side note, y'all, yeah, if you're ever in Asheville, Taco Billy's is off the hook. Jason from So the Land, YouTube channel was the one that actually turned me on to that place. And y'all, I mean, some of these people can be crazy, but at the same time, you know that they are absolute Nazis in the food that they have out there, and it is second to none. And able to get some gluten-free options that are every bit as tasty. So Jason, if you're listening to this, I want to give you a hat tip, my man. All right. So that was Saturday. Sunday, check this out. Okay, let me back up a little bit. A couple of weeks ago, a few weeks back, I was talking about that hide tanning class that I did with Ben from Renewed Homestead, and how he and I were the only guys in there. So while I was out there, there was a guy, he was in a wheelchair, and really nice guy named Caleb, younger guy, and just kind of struck up a conversation with him, as I do when I'm out. I make sure I try to talk to everybody. Found out that my man is not only a chef, but he's also a professional knife sharpener. And I was like, dude, you got any classes? Now, I'm a butcher. I should know how to sharpen knives, but I'll be honest with you. I learned from other butchers how to sharpen knives. That's the problem. So I've never been great at it. William has always been good at it because he's trained on it. He studied it. It was a passion of his. And frankly, with him knowing how to do it, it made me lazy in that I never tried to learn how to do it. So I hit him up and I said, look, have you ever got a class? So he emailed me and said, hey, I got a class coming up and I do very small classes, only teach 3 people at a time. So I'm like, I'm Johnny on the spot. But that was scheduled for Sunday. So I'm like, okay, which happened to be that same time they were having that gathering. But I'm like, okay, I'm scheduled for this. There's no way I'm not going to do it. Remember, farming, permaculture, all of it, I equate it to just like a mixed martial arts fighter. Now, I can learn to sharpen knives from butchers, or do I want to go out here and learn to sharpen knives from a bladesmith? Yeah. And that's exactly what I did. So I invested an hour in my training where Michelle and I both learned a lot of good stuff on Saturday. And I devoted 3 hours to his class, which I paid for, which he had a sliding scale, anywhere between $35 to $75, whatever you were able to pay. Man, I was so pleased with it. I paid him $80. And I'm like, dude, forget this sliding scale stuff, man. You have a legit skill here. Folks, I walked in there a blundering novice, and I walked out a blundering novice that needs practice. But I will say, with his tutelage and his training, and it's good night, man. I can't think of the name. Hopefully it'll come to me. Anyway, with his training and his tutelage, because his other two students decided to bug out on him at the last minute. So I was the only one in there. So it was just me and him. And y'all, I mean, I was like, I thought it was unfortunate that, you know, the other people showed up, because this is how my man makes a living, that and sharpening other people's knives. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, okay, this is a great blessing to me, because now I'm getting this guy one-on-one. And it was. Not only did I walk out of there with knowing how to do this, because it's muscle memory, y'all. You got to put it to work, and you got to do it immediately. In fact, when I'm done with this podcast, I'm going to go down there and practice a little bit before I get out there and do more weight eating. But I found out so much about knife sharpening in 3 hours. That's all I had to invest. 3 hours. And now I got another tool under my belt that needs honing, forgive the pun. And it just requires a little bit of practice. But why not learn from the best? Like I said, learning how to sharpen knives from a butcher may be adequate, but I guarantee you're going to learn things. And I did, by learning how to sharpen knives from a guy who deals with knives. So I walked out of there with that training as well. And y'all, I was so happy. All the little micro things that you can't possibly learn online. You can, because William learned how to do it all online, and he was pretty doggone good at it. But maybe I know a few tricks that he might benefit from. Having a magnifying glass. Just a cheap magnifying glass where you can look at the tip and see how you're doing. Things like 3 stones that you probably don't have to buy again. And then also, when I'm doing training out there, now, here's one really cool thing, is when I'm doing training out there and I got tons of knives that I'm using for other people to mess up, instead of having me work on these things, you know what? I got somebody that I can go over there, $5 a knife, and he's going to get them razor sharp, because I just don't have the bandwidth to do it. Plus all the kitchen knives and stuff like that, man, I'm going to get practice on it, because I'm telling you, they got to be made out of that stuff on Wolverine skeleton, like some adamantium for Michelle not to destroy it. And in fact, he was showing me a list of, I mean, all these knives, he took pictures of them and how awful they were and how you can correct all these things. But look, here is the moral to the story, y'all. Micro training. That's what I'm calling it. Micro training. So that's what I'm thinking about doing in terms of my own classes that I intend to teach out here. Things where people could show up just for an hour or two. I didn't even realize how possible it was until this weekend. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, 3 hours, y'all, and I'm walking out of there totally capable. You know, a couple of weeks prior to that, 2 days worth, and now I know how to hide tan rabbits. Didn't know how to do that before. Even though I'm a guy with limited time, like so many of you out there, y'all, you can still get some extraordinary training by seeking that micro training. Just even if it's somebody talking for a while about something it is you don't know how to do. And that's where I'm thinking about, I might want to lead instead of, because everybody's so doggone busy. Like, and believe me, my brain is running at 100 miles an hour. If we could somehow acquire this place where we have parking next door, I could put up a barn, have a training center where I could do things like high density grazing, come out and do a class on that, high density grazing. You're not going to spend all day doing it. Or, you know, how we integrate everything. Maybe you don't spend all day doing it. Just enough where people can show up, do a class, make it inexpensive, build community all at the same time, feed everybody, especially all this meat that I got falling out of the doggone freezers like Eric was talking about a minute ago, and show everybody how well and awesome all this stuff can. But I just need, like I said, I don't have the parking space out here. Just can't do it. Can't hike everybody up this mountain and people have varying degrees of ability. So I need to have a parking place and way to get everybody around to be able to do all this stuff. But folks, that's what I'm inventing, or that, I don't know, maybe it already exists, micro training. That's what I'm calling it. So this weekend, just to kind of come full circle with this, y'all, 1 hour on Saturday yielded tons of methods and techniques. And honestly, being able to ask a guy who has 40 years experience at this, knowing how to do it a certain way, and then also knowing and having the wherewithal to say, you know what, I'm not going to use this, or I'm not going to use that. And then going out there for 3 hours with a guy who is a professional knife sharpener, figuring out all the ways, and I'll be honest with you, the way I was taught in the butcher shop is absolutely wrong. Like I said, they're butchers. And half of these guys, most of them would send their knives off to get sharpened, and all they would do is hone. So I'm learning how to do these things from people that aren't that good at it. Now, with practice, I'm going to become an expert at it, and I can't wait. I mean, I am I'm chomping at the bit, y'all, to get it, to get the practice I need. And of course, give yourself some grace. You're going to screw it up, but get that training. All right, y'all. So I'm really pleased to be able to share that with y'all. All right. So let's go into the Q&A section. Okay. We got some over here. And folks, I want to also remember, if I'm not getting to your emails, it's because they're not getting to me. And if I don't respond, if I don't respond online, I'll respond on the podcast. But if it's not getting to me, y'all, look, they're playing games with my emails, and hearing from other freedom-minded folks, I'm hearing the same thing is kind of happening to them as well. All right, so we hear from Matthew, my man Matthew Davis. Love hearing from him. He said, hey, Billy, always enjoy listening to the Pimpcast and the YouTube channel and the Patreon. Heard you talking about having any animals on crutches, and he says they never give the bees sugar water. We let them keep them in brood boxes. Okay, I was just talking about that very thing. And he was asking about the microscope we use. I mean, man, Matthew's just... Man, he's one of those people out there, man, that just gives me joy every time, because I know that he's constantly, constantly growing, folks. We all have to. And it is such a joy. But to see his development and where he started and where he's going, and to get correspondence from him from time to time, is just such a joy. So for anybody that wants to know, as far as the camera we use, and thank you also, Matthew, for the prayers. We're praying for you guys as well. It's a LW Scientific mini vid, and it is MVC as in Mike Victor Charlie -U as in uniform, 6, the number 6, M as in Mike, P as in Papa -USB3. So, yep, that's the microscope. That is the camera we use on the microscopes when we're doing our examinations. And we're going to be doing a lot more of that as of late. All right, so we got another one here from Brett. Hello, just got a question for Billy. When making a compost ring out of the hardware cloth, do I need it on the pallet, or could I just place it on the ground? I'm guessing the pallet gives you more airflow. Yeah, you got it right there, Brett. And I'm sorry I didn't answer that in the video. Well, there's a couple of reasons why I would encourage you using a pallet. You don't have to. You could absolutely put it on the ground. Some would even argue that it's better on the ground because you're going to get any worms or whatever that are going to want to go into that pile. But when it's under high heat, believe me, the worms ain't coming up in there. Worms can't stand high heat. They don't come in that pile until it gets to ambient temperature. But there are other microorganisms that would benefit from having it on the ground. I'm going to always suggest a pallet at this point, if it's possible. It is not absolutely necessary. Number one, for airflow. It makes all the difference in the world. It really does. If you can suspend that pallet, and also when you move it, airflow, believe it or not, is number one. Especially if you get that pile too hot, you will find out that you will create a lot of actinobacteria, which is that white substance you may have in your compost pile. You'll find out that you'll have less of it if you're able to elevate that and also create, once again, more airflow. So there's that reason as well. Also, when I'm moving a pile, I find out that I get more of it when it's sitting on the pallet. Like when I turn the pallet sideways, I can bounce it off and it's all collected in one spot, which is a little tougher to do. And also, if you got grass or dirt out there, you get less of your pile in there. You know, you're getting things on the ground that maybe you didn't intend. So that's why I like to do it that way. In fact, I don't do it any other way these days, unless it's going to be in the chicken tractor on steroids, which really I don't have the bandwidth to do that these days. Hopefully in the near future, I can get back to it, because there are I mean, I'm going to have to raise more birds, not for meat, but I'm thinking about replacing this chicken flock I have right now. They're doing great, but they're coming up on that 2-year period, and I kind of rotate them out when they get to that point. Plus, the minerals and stuff that I'm getting out of their bones when I make broth is second to none. That's why I like really, really, really old chickens for that. And if you don't want to necessarily eat the meat on those old chickens, they make really good dog food, but it's kind of hard to beat the broth that comes off of them. Plus, you can stick it in an Instant Pot for a while, and it might be a little bit to the bite, which is what most countries are used to eating when it comes to chicken. It's not this stuff that's very, very, very tender. It's not supposed to be. In fact, from the people I know in France, they won't eat a Cornish cross. So they always expect that bird to have a little bit of bite, and that you should work for it. And then, you know, honestly, they're thinking about all the things that they bioaccumulate in their flesh and also in their bones when they're eating it. So they're looking at it in a, you know, in a multifaceted way. Okay, so we got one from Rebecca. Rebecca Alboon, I think that's how it's pronounced. Thank you for your reply. We will get some bone saws on those trees and bushes tomorrow. So she was asking, I responded to her last week, I believe. Then we're going to get started in lasagna-ing under what's left of our apple trees and get the comfrey going along with oregano, thyme, and rosemary guild. Man, that gives me such joy to hear so many people are doing this stuff, y'all. I mean it, man. I don't think much of myself. I really don't. And even when I hear responses from you folks, that's part of the joy that I get is knowing that this stuff is becoming more and more infectious the more we do it. Even though YouTube may have a shadow ban or whatever the case may be, man, it's getting out to the people that matter, to the people that are doing it. People like Rebecca and all of you folks out there that are really kicking it off. Man, it just gives me such joy. But she's asking if we've ever grown moringa. Yeah, we have, actually in Texas. And where we were in Northeast Texas really wasn't the best place in the world. Out of all the moringa I grew there, I had one that did make it and come back. So I never did replicate that one, but I probably should have, or propagated it rather. Moringa, boy, I mean, that is a wonder. I wish it grew up here. Maybe if somebody ever adapts it to grow up here, I'd definitely do it. But yeah, we've grown moringa out there, and the sheep loved it, if I recall correctly. And I remember the chickens ate it too. You can eat it too, y'all. If you're in one of those more tropical environments and you can grow moringa, I'd give it a shot, because that stuff is something else. And I can't remember what the cultivar was. Moringa, I can't remember the scientific name all the way through, but there's some that's really good and some that aren't. So do your research on that. And she's also saying that her husband did an online permaculture class and is unstoppable on their 2 to 3 acre Southern Exposure homestead in Pennsylvania. Man, that is just such joy out there. Folks, I don't talk about it enough, but if you really want to avoid making a whole lot of mistakes, go out there, get yourself a permaculture design certificate. I mean, there are places online. I've recommended School of Permaculture. It's an inexpensive way where you can do it for $25 a month. Or if you want the best of the best, there's Jeff Lawton. You're going to pay considerably more, but you're learning from the best on the planet. But I've done both. And I'm telling you, you're going to walk away. The information is solid, but there is no better permaculture teacher on the planet than Jeff Lawton. Ain't no doubt on that in my book. All right, y'all. Hopefully this was a blessing to you. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive. I was catching the worm.